Welcome to Ask My Mice.
Love you and I, cause I love you so much. Oh, 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 I just love you. I just like help, help. I just like help. I just like you too. I just like you. I just love you. Happy New Year, I love you, say goodbye. You're going to school, and that's okay. Yum, 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 I just love you.
Well, welcome everybody to the Tuesday, June 13th edition of Optimize My Life and the Blog Radio Show, sponsored by the Hope Collection, a 501c3, it's a nonprofit founded by an incredible friend of ours for life, Joel and Artist Griffin. And what we're doing today is we're broadcasting on several platforms. It started with the Pearl Wall Blog Talk Radio, an internet operational radio show where we can, for pennies or nothing, be able to communicate with each other all across the United States, Canada, and I understand today that we're actually going to many countries in the world. My name is Ron Clayton. I'm the president of the Hope Collection, and we look forward to speaking with you today and joining in really with the idea in mind that we're going to do is spread hope for the world. Hope is what Joel used to say. Well, hope is Christ, and he brought hope to the world, and we're doing that today because we're going to be expressing really the dream and the vision of an organization, a country, a world that's moving forward to be able to honor and glorify our God in heaven. We're proud of that, and we stand on it. And with my privilege is I get to introduce to you an incredible friend. He and his wife introduced us to the world of travel years ago, and it's taken us literally around the world. And now we're continuing that dream, that vision, and we're sharing it with the world. And we welcome everybody that would join us and listen in today. I want to say hello to, here he is, Rick Reese from Colorado Springs. How are you today, Mr. Rick?
I am doing fantastic. I was on another call, and a gentleman said, "Hey, can you talk right now?" No, I can't. Well, I'm doing fantastic.
Well, I just want to say thank you because you are someone that we are so fortunate that you're able to, on a regular basis, continuously and intentionally, you are here available to share your heart, your experience, the history of your life, your family, what it means in this world, because you are a difference maker. You are to be recognized and respected for it. We're thankful and grateful because we have that level of friendship and understanding. And so, Rick, I just get so excited on every Tuesday because we could be anywhere, and we are many times. We've been in different places in the world. And the show continues. Either someone may sit in for us, or we actually broadcast from where we're at. I think that's really cool when we do that.
I know, you're mobile.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things about being in travel is the ability to be mobile and actually work from a destination or the deck of a cruise ship.
You gotta do that again,
right? I did that.
I know,
that
we gotta do it again.
Yeah, well, that trip, but we were also on a transatlantic crossing.
That's right.
And a transatlantic crossing leaving out of Fort Lauderdale on our way to Portugal, well, Azores, Portugal. But it took 8 days to cross the Atlantic. And normally on a cruise ship, you know, you're going from port to port to port, and it keeps you kind of busy, you know, because you're sailing between ports, and then pretty much the next morning, unless it's a day at sea, you know, you're scrambling, you're getting up, and you're getting off the ship to see wherever you're at. Well, in the transatlantic crossing, you know, you're at sea for 8 days crossing the Atlantic. So you can sleep in, you can relax in the morning, you can have breakfast, a sit-down breakfast instead of, you know, the buffet kind of breakfast. And one of the things that Brenda and I did is we took dance lessons.
Wow.
And I learned all these different dances, immediately forgot them, but while I was going through, it was pretty
good.
Hey,
you
pretty
did learn to do the macaroni, though, didn't you?
I did. They had an instructor that went through and taught all the different dances. And I was pretty good while I was doing it. Immediately afterwards, I forgot them. And so they would have every night, of course, they had the open floor and people were, you know, dancing. And you had these guys, these folks that brought their shoes with them. Which,
oh,
you know,
boy.
That they were pretty serious about it. And they put their dance shoes on and they're out there and they're waltzing around. And so Brenda and I said, and it was just like, most of the people didn't get up. People didn't, it was just this one couple that was on the floor. And they had the whole floor, and they're just kind of waltzing around and going around the entire floor. And everybody's sitting there and watching and gawking and, oh, my God, how good they are. And so Brenda and I said, hey, let's go out there and just kind of just try to remember what we learned. Hey, I learned to dance in the basement, one of those old basement parties in the back in the 70s.
Yeah. But, you know,
where you couldn't move.
Special moments.
Well, you couldn't
Rick,
move.
Those are special moments.
Those are special moments. You didn't bump the person next to you. You kind of just stayed straight and just kind of just moved around. But, yeah, so we said, yeah, let's go out there and just have fun. We'll try to remember what we learned. And so Brenda and I go out there, and we're kind of just flailing around a little bit, trying to remember all these amazing dances that we learned. And people are just looking at us. You know, everybody got up and started dancing.
I was just going to say, what you did, you did by example. You didn't lead, you led by example. And you also, here's what's really cool, Rick. You gave other people the freedom to feel that they could too. Do you know when you succeed?
Ooh, that's good stuff.
When you succeed, what you're doing is you're giving other people permission to succeed. That's why it's so important that we
write that down.
And you know, every generation has the opportunity. Within the generation, there are people who choose. They're intentional. And then there's people that stand on the sidelines. When they do get in that sense of freedom, they have to get it from somewhere, and they're going to get it from somebody they come in contact with. And so every time we intentionally move forward, get it out of our comfort zone, then we make a difference. We give someone else the permission to do the same. And that's what a testimony
Ooh,
is
good,
so
man.
Important. But it's so important
that's
in
good.
Our lives more than ever.
You know, and you hit on something that is so, so very, very important, is that by demonstration, what are you doing to demonstrate that which you believe? Because when you do, and like you're saying, when you succeed or when you even try, you give others permission to try or succeed. You unlock the door. And the sad thing about it, it's an imaginary door. It's all in your mind. But when you even try to succeed, you give other people permission to try. And that's an interesting responsibility that people can take on. I was reading something yesterday, and kind of similar to what you quoted, Aristotle. Okay, Plato. Okay, all right, Plato. And it was when you help yourself succeed, you will be drawn to people who will also help you succeed, as like attracts like. So it's like what you're saying. When you help yourself succeed and not just sit there doing nothing, but just take on the challenge to help yourself succeed, understanding there's a law of attraction. There's a like attracts like. So when you do that, you will be drawn to people who will also help you succeed. That becomes your circle. Your circle becomes you. You attract what you are, not what you desire. And so when you can become that example, you know, people are looking for people and they're not becoming the person they're looking for. And so they find who they are. No matter how much, no, you find who you are. And so you can find who you're looking for by becoming, you know, that which you expect. And pretty powerful stuff. And, but yeah, well, this is an amazing journey.
And, you know, speaking of journeys, I know I was talking to one of our other board members from the Hope Collection. I know you know her well. Her name is Mary Stanley. And she's, by the way, she is on the call today, Rick. And
Mary
she asked, we were just talking about a journey that you have a special perspective that you can share with us. And she's asked me if we could consider talking about it today here on this, we can call it Travel Tuesday. So we're not really going away from travel. In fact, you're going to involve, probably touch about some things that are is travel in the lives of people in your family, in your family's history, that it was pioneering, that today set the stage for people to go forward like you're describing. In other words,
About Juneteenth. Interesting.
Many people today still don't really know what Juneteenth is. And it's vital to who we are to know what it is.
Juneteenth, and I was actually, thanks Mary for opening the door for that discussion, because Mary just actually did what we just talked about. When you try, when you succeed, you give other people permission to do it. And so for her even asking the question, and so I was doing a little research. Interesting, I didn't know about Juneteenth until I was an adult. I could probably say maybe 2007. You know, I heard of it, but it wasn't something that outside of Texas anyone really knew about. You know, I didn't know about it. I grew up in Massachusetts and never heard about Juneteenth. The 19th
and
of June was just my...
That you brought that up, because that's when I learned about it, was when I was stationed at Fort Sam in San Antonio. I didn't hear about it growing up until, you know, it's a big thing in Texas.
Yeah, who knew? My family...
I'm an exception to that not common knowledge, because in Buffalo, we have the second largest Juneteenth festival in the United States every June 19th, year.
How about that? Well, it was the best kept secret everywhere I was. And when I learned about it, the 19th to me of June is my anniversary, my wedding anniversary. So that's all I knew about the significance of the 19th. My wife asking me, how many years, buddy? And I better get it right. But I was looking at the Juneteenth, and interestingly enough, in 2007 or 6, one of the two, I went to a family reunion in Galveston, Texas. And I about Juneteenth. Imagine, this was my family. And so just to give you an idea, my great-great-grandfather, John Flucker Thomas, was a baby and in Alabama and owned by the founder's wife of Galveston, Texas. And so the founder of Galveston, Texas, William Menard, founded Texas and got married, had a wife. I mean, had this lady he was dating that lived in Alabama. And so he left Galveston to go pick her up and all her belongings and to bring them back to Galveston. And my great-great-grandfather made that trek as a baby back to Galveston as one of her slaves that she brought from Galveston. And so we were pretty much, you would say now, the first family of slaves to the founder of Galveston, Texas. And I was doing some research on it. We have one lady in our family that does a lot of the research, and she did all this. But I was just kind of going back and looking at it, and my last name is Reese. So when the founder, William Menard, went to Alabama, he married her in Alabama and then brought everybody back to Galveston. The minister who married them, his last name was Reese, Reverend Reese. The same as mine. Is it? I was like, wow. So the minister that actually married them, his name was Reverend Reese. And, of course, nothing to do with me, but it was just interesting as information. But so my great-great-grandfather, John Flucker Thomas, was a baby, and then they were all brought back to Galveston and to serve the founder of Galveston. And that became a big deal. When the slaves were freed, and General Granger, Union General Granger, arrived in Galveston on June 19th, 1885, to enforce Abraham Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation of 1863. So we're talking 2.5 years later. The Union soldiers had to come to Texas to enforce the Emancipation Proclamation, ordering that all remaining slaves in Texas be immediately free. Because we were the first family of slaves to the founder of Galveston, it's been told in our little family history that, of course, we got the information first. And upon receiving that information, in my family, we say we had the first Juneteenth party. And so we had the first, we kicked off the first Juneteenth party, being slaves of the founder of Galveston, Texas, in compliance with General Order Number 3. And here's what General Order, in a nutshell, had to say, with how it read. The people of Texas are informed that in accordance with a proclamation from the Executive of the United States, all slaves are free. This involves an absolute equality of rights and rights of property between former masters and slaves, and the connection heretofore existing between them becomes that of employer and hired laborer. And we had a party. And that began the Juneteenth celebrations. Now, interesting, also, enough, my family over the history, of course, living in Texas, were part of the whole movement for national recognition of Juneteenth, you know, as a day of celebration and marking, you know, when the slaves were free. And they got it into, of course, they were like ministers, politicians, you know, they basically just became pretty much everything and taking leadership in the state of Texas, not only Galveston, but in the state of Texas and so many other areas, but to really push this through to be recognized, Juneteenth, to be recognized in the state of Texas and beyond. And so when President, I think it was Biden, signed the whole executive order recognizing Juneteenth as a national holiday, my family was in the room at the White House because of their involvement and all the way back. And that was a pretty cool thing. And, my great-grandfather, my great-grandfather was named after the founder of Galveston. It kind of lets you know the relationship that he had, you know, at that time with his master. They had a pretty, from what I understand, they had a pretty good relationship, albeit slave master. But he named his son after the founder, William Menard, and our last name, our family name is Thomas. And so my great-grandfather became a Galveston police officer in 1918 and held the rank of sergeant. Can you imagine in the Old West,
wow,
which Galveston kind of was, being a police officer in 1918? And but he was a police officer, and he married this lady by the name of Maddie, and they lived in Galveston until the hurricane came and devastated all of Galveston. And he had 11 kids. They all survived, but he moved the family to Houston, a little bit safer. And one of his daughters was my grandmother. They called her Hun Thady Thomas. That is the history. So Juneteenth is the oldest nationally celebrated commemoration of the ending of slavery in the United States. And, of course, it originated in Galveston, Texas, and is now celebrated annually on the 19th of June. As I mentioned earlier, I didn't even know what Juneteenth was, and you would hear glimpses here and there. But Juneteenth is a day of reflection, a day of renewal, Pride Field Day. It is a moment in time taken to appreciate the African-American experience. It is inclusive of all races, ethnicities, and nationalities, as nothing is more comforting than the hand of a friend. Juneteenth serves symbolically and in reality as a reference point from which to measure and appreciate the progress and contributions made by African-Americans to society. Juneteenth is a day on which honor and respect is paid for the sufferings of slavery. It is a day on which we acknowledge the evils of slavery and its aftermath. On Juneteenth, we talk about our history and realize because of it, be a bond between us. On Juneteenth, we think about that moment in time when the enslaved in Galveston, Texas, received the word of their freedom. We imagine the depth of their emotions, their jubilant dance, and their fear of the unknown. Juneteenth is a day that we commit to each other that the needed support as a family, as family, friends, coworkers, is the day we build coalitions that enhance African-American economies, economics. On Juneteenth, we come together, young and old, to listen, to learn, and to refresh the drive to achieve. It is a day when we take one step closer together to better utilize the energy wasted on racism. Juneteenth is a day that we pray for peace and liberty for all. And that's our family story. So the family story when we come together is that, yeah, we kicked off the first Juneteenth celebration. And so every 8th of June, my family gets together in Galveston, Texas, and they make the hike from where Granger General Granger made the proclamation and delivered the proclamation to the mansion, which still stands, of William McNard, the founder of Galveston. And they made that trek, and they do it every 8th of June. And they did it this year, and I was looking at some pictures, and for the older people, they have, you know, a trolley that follows the walk, and it's playing music, and they're dancing down the street, and they're, you know, really kind of just celebrating. But they do that to commemorate, you know, what happened in 1865. And can you imagine? I mean, it's amazing, but one of my cousins, he's one of those historians, genealogists, who does all the genealogy research in the family, and she took it all the way back to Virginia. And one of my ancestors, actually, you know, and that's where the bend in the road kind of comes, an Irish gentleman married an African-American woman, and that began everything, you know, from that point that we can trace back. And we was just wondering, as a family, how they traveled, you know, what mode they traveled from Virginia, you know, to Galveston, and that still kind of remains a mystery. But family, when you research your family, you know, all families are the same. You know, all families have bends in the road. All families go through trials, tribulations, you know, in some form or another, persecutions. All families. And it's a common experience of man. You know, it's a common experience of humanity. But thank God, you know, thank God that, you know, the better natures of man will always prevail. And so when I look at a lot of the things that I do, you know, involved in community building and love of people, you know, that has become our family trait, to get involved, to make a difference. And I look at some of my ancestors and how they got involved in, you know, in politics in Galveston, in the state of Texas. And when I started researching them, because that was my first family reunion that I went to in 2006-07, and so I didn't know that side of the family. But when I started researching and listening and meeting them and befriending them, I found that that was one of the trends of our family, is to get involved, you know, to not sit on the sideline, but to build community. And interestingly enough, it made sense in that to me on why I do the things that I do. You know, it has actually become a family trait. And the most interesting thing about that, I was doing it and then found out that that's what they do. You know, that's what Thomases do. So, but that's kind
Rick,
of
it's so, I think Rick, I think it's so incredible, the parallels of your history of your family. And again, what you're saying about you and what you and Brenda are today and do, because you are forging a path for people again today, which we were talking about earlier, is that you are able to set an example in your freeing other people today of all walks of life. You know, when you look at the lives that you have touched, that you're continuing, even to this day, to this moment, that you are continuing by your example, by your heart, by your spirit, by your willingness to serve, you are demonstrating the same spirit that it took to get where we are at this point in time, moving forward, and how we can claim. We haven't won the total victory, obviously. There's a lot to do. But you are part of an important part of the history, and as you learned, we're learning too. I'd like to ask you, I know you were recently in Buffalo, New York, and it has a historical aspect to it that's similar to what happened in Galveston, in that we had a woman that I know everybody who's on this call and maybe listening in has heard about, Harriet Tubman. They just had a, last night there was a show on public television that was telling her story. you know, she was being, they were telling how she could have walked away. She could have just been quiet. She was still a slave, and yet as still a slave, she was leading people to freedom. And it just so happened she lived in Buffalo, New York. And between Buffalo and Rochester and East, she helped and had part of the, called it the Underground Railway. And there was, it was a series of homes that people would open up and take people in that were trying to escape before it was proclamation. The only way you got out of it is to get out of the country. Many went to Canada. Well, the last place they had to, there's a big river here in Buffalo called Niagara River. It's treacherous. And there were not bridges back then. But they got people across. Harriet Tubman and the team of people that worked and did what they put their lives on the line for the generations today and us. And she demonstrated what serving is all about. I believe when you were here, did you not get it? Did you get a chance to go to the First Baptist Church and the Heritage Corridor? Did you get a chance, you and Brenda, get a chance to go there while you were here?
I did. And talk about an amazing experience. That was pretty awesome as an experience. And I also had a chance to go to the Colored Musicians Club, which is still the longest running African-American owned jazz club. You know, since 1917, they were founded. And you had mentioned this to me, that every colored musician in the States, in the United States, had to get a license through their union. And so I had a chance to stop by there, and it was closed. But I had a chance to do a little research and found out that we're organized in 1918, the Colored Musicians Club, and chartered in 1935. And it has been the longest running African-American jazz club in America. And I actually went to their website, the Colored Musicians Club website, and I was looking at their mission statement. You know, it's amazing what we don't know. And until you actually told me that this was in where are you? Buffalo. That I had no idea. But the mission statement, the Colored Musicians Club is dedicated to promoting research and preserving the history of African American music, not only in Buffalo, but globally. And they aspire to enlighten, encourage, and educate our youth on the musical heritage. And their vision statement is to be the global icon in the presentation of African American music, where the next generations of legends are made. And they're committed to keeping alive traditions, histories, and values for future generations. But that was one of my stops, you know, before I went to the Harriet Tubman House and the museum. And that was, you know, continually amazed at all of these, you know, places that we hear about, but you never really think about. I mean, it's Buffalo. But I went to the Niagara Falls Underground Heritage Center. You know, it made me remember and think, we never heard of the Underground Railroad, you know, growing up. And it's like, I thought it was an actual railroad at one time. I was like, hey, you jump on the railroad, how does it go underground? You know, but the mission of the Underground Railroad Heritage Center, to reveal authentic stories of Underground Railroad freedom seekers and abolitionists in Niagara Falls, that inspire visitors to recognize even modern injustices that stem from slavery and take action toward equitable society. Institutionalize things that are just institutionalized that need to be corrected. The vision to be at the forefront of Underground Railroad interpretation, by encouraging visitors to take action for civil and human rights and creating global change. And again, that begins in Niagara Falls. Who knew Niagara Falls community was so still involved? And but it's amazing. So we were there, and if you get a chance to go to Niagara Falls, Niagara, you will find that you'll find this museum and the display. Even before going inside, we didn't go into the museum. I just took some pictures of the display and went through the display and how it talks about one more river to cross into freedom. And so you can imagine, you know, the slaves from the South and other places, and they showed, you know, the migration to Niagara from all over the South in different places. And the Underground Railroad, where there was a network of places of stops in between. You know, that was the underground network. You know, you may go to this ranch or stop at this place, and on your way north to Niagara to cross the river that you were talking about, the Niagara River, to step into Canada. And there was a bridge called the Freedom Bridge. And so Brenda and I, we saw the remnants of the Freedom Bridge from back in the 1800s there that they used to cross. And, of course, they used to cross the river as well. And so we saw how, you know, the falls, Niagara Falls, off in the distance and all the way to where we were, and how the river narrowed and kind of slowed down. And like you're saying, back in those days, it was probably more, you know, rapids. But it was, you know, like not as wide, you know, where we were, you know, from, you know, downstream of the falls. But one more river to cross into freedom. And when we were over in Canada, you know, we saw the gravesite of Negroes that made it across into Canada. And they have their own, they call it the Negro gravesite. And so, you know, the burials of the folks that made it across. And also while in Canada, the battle of General Brock?
Yeah, Brock.
During the War of 1812.
War of 1812,
And, of course, you took us to that, and so we saw, you know, that battle of 1812 where the Canadians say they beat us.
That's really good.
And they really repelled, you know, what it did is they actually lost, but it brought more awareness to Canada and the Canadians, you know, standing up for the rights. But while I was at the monument dedicated to General Brock, who was killed by, like you said, in that battle, I saw a plaque dedicated to the black militia units in Canada. And from 1812 to 1850. And here's what it said. It said, through their service in the militia, upper Canadians of African descent showed their determination to share in the duties and rights of British subjects. During the War of 1812, many served in regular units or joined the segregated colored corps, which worked on fortifications and fought as Queenston Heights and other battles, fought at Queenston Heights and other battles of the Niagara campaign. They also served during the Upper Canada Rebellion, and many were kept on strength until 1850. When considered in proportion to the population, black men volunteered in large numbers, a testament to their belief in Canada as a haven for those formerly enslaved. Amazing! And then it brings me to Memorial Day and Memorial Day services, where, Ron, this is something that you worked on 7 years ago, and Joel Griffith, founder of the Hope Collection, and this is our call, Hope Collection. I am a board member of the Hope Collection. But it was something that was brought to the forefront by Joel Griffin back in how many years ago to help bring to life the monument dedicated to black veteran servicemen, black servicemen who fought in every war, from the Revolutionary War. Ron, tell us something about that. I really like how you described that.
Well, it was uncovered years ago, many years before I even knew aware of it. Going back to the founding of our country, remember you heard when you were in school, maybe you heard we had studied our history in New York State because we were very much a part of the development of our country and history and even the Civil War. But there were people that served before we were a country to help fight for our freedom, to become a country. And one of those gentlemen was a black man from Boston who was one of the first ones that stood at Bunker Hill and took a bullet for USA, America. And from that day forward till today, the country has been served by the entire African-American society, generations. And even in Washington, D.C., there is not a monument recognizing that. And since it's an important part of our history, our culture, and our future, that this be recognized. We in America, we believe in recognition. We believe in achievement and recognizing achievement that's been stolen from us by people who don't believe in America. And I say that because a few years ago, a group of people in Buffalo decided that we're going to do something about it. So they got together a committee, and they studied, and they looked through the history and found out everything I told you is true. And they formed the AAVM Monument Committee, the African American Veterans Monument Committee. And they designed, got a designer and a developer, and designed a monument that they were going to put up at the most likely place in Buffalo, New York, is at the waterfront at the Buffalo Naval Park, largest inland naval recognition memorial in the United States, that this would be where this monument would be placed. And we were in 7 years in planning the event to dedicate it and honor it and honor the whole program in that time. Committee of people that were working very diligently. We had COVID hit. We had people with organizations. We had all kinds of things organized. In fact, we were planning on having Rick Reese and Brenda Reese being part of the Juneteenth parade. They could come up here and be honored and recognized as being some of the families that have roots deep within the idea of Juneteenth. And so that all came about. But then when COVID hit and one of our keynote speakers passed away, that was General Colin Powell, it really put the whole thing into a buzz that we just never recovered from. And there were some things that developed internally and politically. And so the Hope Collection, by the way, the Hope Collection was deeply involved in it. We had a whole program. I'm sitting at my dining room table. I have a 6-inch stack of all the planning information, all the stuff we'd planned to put into that program. I'm now sorting through everything. And since what happened was the opportunity came for us to help celebrate Memorial Day. And in doing so, we were able to incorporate much of what we wanted to have in that celebration. And by the way, right behind the podium where Len Kane, Rear Admiral, spoke about the kindness campaign today that he created to help us overcome the loss and the tragedy and the healing process that's so necessary as we go forward in this world. He didn't want to just talk about what happened. You know, he recognized that he can't do anything about the terror of people who have died. We honor them. We cherish them. We help, and we want to comfort and counsel those who are still hurting. But Len Kane is committed to helping people heal. And so he talks about the kindness campaign. And right behind him, over his shoulder, sits the African American Veterans Monument. And we completely honor its existence, and we were committed to making it not only in a local or a national or statewide event, but we're going to make it an international event televised. We've gone to great lengths. Well, we didn't get that accomplished, but we did get Memorial Day accomplished working with the Battle Within organization. And I'm so proud and so excited that, Rick, you and Brenda chose. You didn't have to break your schedule of your summer, not just your family events and all the things going on. You took time out to make it a very vital, important part of your life and honoring those the people that you have served with, too. And so we honor you and appreciate you sharing this today.
Thank you so much. You know, and that brings up an important point. Although we were involved early on, you know, with the African American Veterans Monument, and because of COVID, like you're saying, and many things that just happened and changes and politics and all kinds of different things, you know, we weren't able to bring it to pass, but it didn't stop the vision. You know, they had their unveiling for the African American Veterans Monument. It continued. And of course, they're still raising money for it now, but it didn't stop anything. We didn't stop anything. And the important point is that the vision, even though you may not be the one to bring it to pass, the vision will continue on as long as you have that vision. And it may not be your job, you know, to fulfill it, but somebody's going to step in and fulfill that vision. And so in this case with the African American Veterans Monument, you know, they continued on and was able to get the first steps. They're not done yet. They're still raising money, but it honors African Americans who have fought in all 12 of our military conflicts here in the United States, all 12 of them. And enlisted either voluntarily or were drafted, but they served. And so, Ron, that vision, and that's what's so amazing, that it continued on, as visions do. I believe the next step, and it's not just any more ethnic groups, I believe. I believe it's more class nowadays, and where you have classism, you know, and you still have, of course, racism, but you have classism and people who are making a lot, that becomes now the system that keeps people in bondage and where you can't rise, you can't move. And, Ronnie, you know, I think that is so important. You also tell the story. The pilgrims didn't come over looking for a job. Now, the Indians, of course, helped them to survive, but they came over to figure it out and figure out who I need to, you know, partner with, you know, what do I need to do, how do I plant, how do I do, and they survived. You know, that's where we are today, you know. Jobs are jobs. Just over broke, journey on the way to brokenness, just on bills, the money you make. And the boss makes you jump out of bed. And can't talk about jobs. You got a job, praise God. But at some point, if you have a vision, a job is not going to accomplish that vision. You know, it's making someone else's generation of family wealthy, you know, while yours goes and just kind of, you know, muddles along. But slavery is across the board, and it becomes classism. And we are the land of opportunity. We live in the land of opportunity. And that's why a lot of foreigners come over and they do so well. Americans, it seems, have been lulled into this place of complacency. And even with all the opportunity that abounds, where there are no limits, the shackles exist. And the shackles are shackles of mindset. And shackles of, I want it this way to be successful. I don't want to do it that way. You know, like the guy who was, I forget the general back in the Bible, who didn't want to jump in the dirty water, Naaman, didn't want to jump in the dirty water to be healed. He wanted to jump in clean water. And He's like, no, I don't want to be dipped, even though I have leprosy in this dirty water. I want, you know. And it's like, well, you're going to die in your leprosy. And we make those kinds of choices even today. But yes.
Well, Rick, what's happened today is, by the way, it's self-inflicted. And I would be so bold as to say, that most people are living a life of some semblance of what they call the I'm drawing a blank on my mind. It's incredible. They're indoctrinated into modern day slavery because that's what a job is. You are run, your life tells you how you can live, where you can live, when you can live, when you can eat, when you can sleep, when you can go, when you can go. And what the country of America became and is still today, as you said, it's a bright beacon because in this, the fundamental of ownership, self-ownership, not government ownership, self-ownership, it is the number one, and it's the only way to create generational prosperity. You can't knight somebody into it. You can't pass it to somebody. You can only do it by earning and developing equity in owning something, a value that someone else in the world will put a price of value on it. And then it can be used and leveraged to do what you want to do. But in the meantime, you have to follow the rules that somebody else is always in control of. Now, in America, you don't have to give up what you're doing to pay the bills. That's what a job is, by the way. But you can create ownership in spite of around it. And because America allows you to do things not just in a fixed time, the corporations have created the idea that you have to have a 40-hour work week and a time schedule, and if you don't do that and follow this pattern, they used to say that they were going to take care of you. But that's not true. Everybody knows that that was not necessarily true. That was called the 40-year plan, Rick. And now we know distinctly. We know distinctly the only way. We can't hide it. We can't cover it. Can't sugarcoat it. We have to help people understand the value of who they are and their value that they can be in the marketplace. And in doing so, you can produce, you can create and produce. And there are tools, there are more tools than you and I can ever think of. There's more people today. There's actually more millionaires being made today than any time in history. And why? Because there's more opportunity than there was. Now, I don't choose to become an expert in the computer world, but there are people who are, and there are many, 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 many people that are living very, 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 very well because they learned an area that they could own and they can develop and control and has equity and value. And what's really beautiful is that we can take to every community, everywhere. It doesn't matter. I love Country Boy. I'm hoping that he's on the call today. But we don't care if you just graduated from Yale or you came from jail. You can achieve in America today. And there are people willing to help you if you want to and are willing to. Those are two keys. Want to and willing to. In other words, it has to be intentional. It doesn't happen by accident. And you and Brenda have led a life of successful living because you serve. And I believe, and you've proven to me along with many other people in my life, have proven that by being a servant leader that you could prosper and live life greatly. And it's a great sense of well-being. You know, when people are busy serving other people, they don't have time to do the other stuff.
It's true. The reason you want to make more money, serve more people.
Yeah. You know, the people that don't got because they don't give.
You don't got because you don't give. You know, like you said, Ron, a job is a firm grip on an empty bag.
I bow that.
You know, there's a quote there's a quote, I don't know, and nobody knows if Harriet Tubman, who said this or not, you know, Harriet Tubman freeing the slaves and leading them across and to freedom. But there's a quote that they attribute to her that she says, I could have saved more people, rescued more slaves, if only they knew they were slaves.
Uh-huh.
They didn't even know that they were slaves. We are modern day freedom fighters and sharing opportunity, you know, with people to have ownership in something, not just working for someone else, making their families rich, but to do something that gives you ownership and equity and a say-so and a feeling of doing something and being involved and controlling your own future and calling your own shots, so to speak. And that is what we're doing and offering opportunities to people. You know, what is your passion? We happen to be in travel. This is Travel Tuesday. We have Surge 365, which I believe is at the top of the heap of travel businesses out there because it just covers everything travel. What is your passion, though? It may be health-related. It may be counseling in some area. You know, find your passion. Understand your purpose. Why are you on this planet? What are your gifts, your talents, your skills that you can use? Do you know your value is in your gifts, your talents, and your skills? If you want to make money, identify your gifts, your talents, and your skills that you have in service of humanity, and it will be the money maker. If you're not making money, focus on those gifts, those talents, and those skills. They have value to people. You were born with them for the purpose of serving others with them. And when you actually do, you'll find that in exchange, there'll be some value coming back to you. It may be money. It may be, you know, just recognition, whatever it may be. But when you serve others with those unique, inborn gifts, talents, and skills, you'll get a return. We are modern-day freedom fighters and fighting for the freedom that we're trying to rescue people if only they knew they were bound. and so being able to move from that mindset, you know, is the most important thing that you can do. I appreciate the opportunity and talking about Juneteenth and all the different things that that we've discussed today. And we discuss them for change, not just for information, but that it would drive change. And I was reading something yesterday as we close up this call. Life is constantly changing and evolving. And for this reason, every next level of your life will require a new and better version of you. You got to keep changing. You don't change, you die. So think about that new and better version that you're aspiring and go get it. Back to you, Von. Back to you, Ron.
Rick, thank you so much for giving me insight and the perspective that only you could do. And we appreciate you willing to discuss it. It to have that history. Some people may look at that and say, look how terrible all these things that happened in your past, and they were. But look how great the future is because of what they did for you. They laid down their life for you. The Bible says there's no greater love than the he who will lay down his life for his brother. Thank God we still have people that are willing to do that. As long as we do, we'll have a country and we'll have a group of people that can move forward and make life better. And I thank everybody. We appreciate every single person that's on this call who may call in or be on the show another day. Thank you so much. You make our world better, too. Thank you, and thanks again, Rick. Have a great day.
Hey, Ron, before Rick leaves, we have a tradition on the show. And Princess is sleeping, so we can't do it live. But yesterday was Mr. Reese's birthday.
So Ariana made me promise that we would play her song for Rick.
Oh,
before the end of the show.
Go right ahead.
Everyone likes you. You look like a cutie. Go back to your room. Oh, tell her I said thanks. There's more. Give her a big hug for me. Tell her I said thank you. She is. Thanks, Ron. Thanks, Mary.
Yeah, have a good day.
Bye, guys.
Bye.